following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now.
Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
How are you doing?
Very good, very good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing better.
Oh, it's good to hear.
Yeah, I've got these ups and downs. We've had some missed shows, and now we are together, even vocally, like one of the last recordings, there was some little gurgles in the voice or whatever was going on, and that got stronger now, too. So, yes, hopefully what was is behind.
Definitely.
So it's good to see you. And I'm really thankful I'm seeing you at the beginning of summertime.
Oh, my goodness.
Yee-hoo!
Very special for us Manitobans, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Half the year is winter, so when we get good weather, we want to celebrate it as much as possible.
Take advantage.
Yeah, so happy summer.
Happy summer.
Thanks.
We should say that more. Happy summer. We are going to go wilderness camping. We're going to go beyond the tent by the vehicle, and we are going to canoe out, and we are going to try camping on the lake. So our kids are very excited about this, because we found that our best experiences are when we are just a little bit lost. And so we're going to go and get lost, kind of.
With a compass.
Of course, yeah.
With a satellite phone.
I'll know where we are, but nobody else will.
What if you get lost? Are you prepared?
Well, maybe. I should think about that, actually. I was worried more about drinking water, but maybe I should be worried about getting lost. Maybe we'll have to let people know when we're leaving and when we're going to come back.
Do you ever see the movie Castaway?
Oh, I did. That was funny. Yes.
And then there was this commercial that FedEx did after that movie came out, was a big success. It was a FedEx delivery mimicking his character that was stranded for ever. And then they go to the door of the person it was delivered to.
Oh.
Do you mind? Can we actually see what's in there? And so she opens it up, and it's got a satellite phone and some kind of other, like, flares.
Funny. Safety equipment. You know, it's amazing how quickly that can happen. We went to a park that was just outside the city, and, you know, it's like a park. It's got a maps, and it's got trails, and we're like, what can happen? I mean, we didn't even think about what could happen. It's just a park, and we're going for a walk as a family. And then all of a sudden, we're on these trails, and there's like a million trails crossing each other. You know, I didn't think they were really all that well marked after all. And we're not that far from our car, but then all of a sudden, it's dark. And then I realize that both of our phones are dead. And I realize, you know, you don't think about it very much, but it's actually chilly. Like, it's not the middle of summer. This is actually pretty cold. And then I look at my kids, and they're really young, you know. And I'm like, I could be, you know, not that far from our car, but there's nobody else around now. Everybody's gone. And I'm like, are we going to have to be out in the woods overnight? Like, how bad is this going to get? You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, you could be lost and you don't have to be that far. And I thought that was kind of interesting to see how quickly that can happen.
Yeah. So how prepared are you? Another good one is this. I think his name is Bear Gorillas. Probably a lot of people know
him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's done all these wilderness expositions and people really learning from that? Or did you ever do the Boy Scouts?
Boy Scouts? I did something like that. I did a version. It was like a tree thing. Oak kids, or I don't know, something like that.
Oh,
yeah,
neat.
Yeah. And it was in a church. I don't know if I was in it long enough to do anything too adventurous. But yeah, definitely.
We had to learn how to make a fire from rubbing two sticks together and wilderness survival.
Yes. So fun, right?
Yeah.
We need to do more of that.
I think so. That's so curious. There's different kinds of programs. Of course, people know about the very common one, Survivor, I think it was called. But then there's a new one. I think it's called The Only One.
Oh.
I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure that's the title.
And then there's like Alone or something like this.
Yeah.
And people are out there. I remember watching that one. It's crazy. People are out there. Basically, are watching to see who can get the closest to starvation before they call for help. And and then they win something, obviously.
Okay. How far to the edge would you be willing to go? Can you, you know, and then when you win, Does that mean you are the conqueror of the wilderness? Or you can face anything. You're the victor.
Oh, man.
So that's your goal then?
Yes, that's my goal.
That's awesome. Why not?
We'll do our own version.
Yay, that's really good. Mm-hmm. I think part of what we're talking about could be a little bit segued from there. Mm-hmm. Moving forward as much as possible, surviving what you don't know. And so our title is Judgment Based on What You Don't Know.
Yeah, so tricky, right? When you mentioned that topic to me, what came to mind was this idea that we never know. And that can actually be offensive to people. I know that if I try to say something like that to somebody, well, you don't actually know. They usually take a pretty big offense at that, even though it's almost categorically true that they don't know. So there's a social knowing that you have to respect where it's like, no, you do know what you're talking about. And that's just a social reality that you have to be careful around. But in literal terms, we don't know. And it's almost always true. So if you're studying a topic, you can actually get a lot of information about a topic very quickly. So you can maybe get to 40% of the information, depends on how small of a topic or narrow of a topic you're looking at. You know, you look up Wikipedia, you Google it, you know, you can find out quite a bit. Then if you really want to study it, you can spend some hours at it, and you can get maybe some days, and you can get to maybe 60%. You can, like, really study this, start to read, like, original publications and stuff like that. Maybe you can get to 80%. And then you can maybe get things from other cultures and language translations of different things and stuff like that, and maybe you can get to 90%. To get to 100%, you might have to learn every language in the world to be able to read all of the literature in its original language, to capture the original meaning in its context, in its culture, to really know it all. And that could take a lifetime and basically be impossible. So typically we don't ever know everything that there is to know about a topic. Never mind, even if you learned all of that, that you actually know everything about the phenomenon. You might know everything anybody ever knows about volcanoes, but you still don't know.
Until you're in one.
And then, you know, can you learn everything, right? So we don't know is kind of a fundamental thing. And so then there's always this question, which we engage in without realizing it, of how deep is efficient, expedient, wise to know before we take the risk based on not knowing everything. Like, do you do the Wikipedia search? Do you go do the Google search? Do you do the reading more about it? Do you, you know, consult a professional or an expert? Nowadays, how many YouTube videos do you watch? And then you have to decide when enough is enough based on the importance and all of those other things that are there.
Well, you've drawn a case and you've made a theory. Mm-hmm. And then you've made some well-planned out decisions. I would think more people go with the wind. You know,
yeah.
The risk of the unknown means flying by the seat of their pants. That it's more of a wing it, try it, find out in the process of doing it without having all the research to back your decision. So you're making a judgment based on what you don't know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. People are, like, socially driven. When you said wind, I immediately thought of crowd. I was like, you go with, the herd is going east. I'm going to just jump in the middle and, like, hope for the best.
Yeah.
We don't go over a cliff, you know. That is the majority, definitely.
Life is like the weather.
Mm.
The wind changes and you can't rely on the knowing of what is going to happen, even ahead of time, because it might shift.
Right.
And so being able to move with the shifting of the wind is like what life can be.
Right. And there's all of these kind of judgments about, like, how much then, if you're going with the wind, how much do you trust the wind? And what wind are we talking about? Like, how much do you trust your family? How much do you trust your culture? Like, how much do we trust Winnipeg culture or Canadian culture or North American culture or even people in the world? How much do you trust, like, the overall earth opinion about something, which sometimes you can kind of figure out what that average opinion is. Like, so do you trust that, or how much do you trust the internet? Or there's a lot of information online now, right? And it's like, how much do you trust the news, or do you go to other sources? And it's challenging.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of conflict around these things now.
Yes.
You know, fake news kind of comes up, right?
You've got both parties mm-hmm. within a family, mm-hmm. even. You'll have the person who has all the theory mm-hmm. and all the intelligence, mm-hmm. and they're the most schooled.
Mm.
Could be literal. They're mm-hmm. the university professor. Sure. And then you have the other in the family who's mm-hmm. a child, and they're learning.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Everything is brand spanking new, and they're a risk taker.
Yeah.
So different types of people around you and surrounding you and where you're getting your information.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather get it from the child.
Personally. Yes. Yes.
I would.
Yes.
In a way, now I'm talking about being able to make mm-hmm. more of something like a personal life choice, something that shows the freedom
mm-hmm.
of a little child and that they just have an open trust yeah. that things are going to work out.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There's so many different ways. Do you do the established wisdom or do you do the emerging wisdom? Do you do the alternative wisdom? Like, and then you also have times when people want more or less. Like, how big of a risk? How much do you even look before you leap? Where some people are like, wow, you're pretty what we would call impulsive. Like, you jump very quickly based on extremely little information when the consequences are huge. It's like, did you check the bungee cord? And it's, you know, like, the consequences are enormous, you know what
yes.
I mean? And maybe you should check. And they're like, well, that's probably fine, you know, and off they go. And then you have the alternate, which is like maybe the extremely, what you might call obsessive or extremely anxious person, sensitive in their nervous system, who maybe never leaves their apartment, you know, and because they don't know. They don't know what could happen, and they're not taking the leap. On one hand, you could have a life ended shortly, prematurely, and on the other hand, you maybe have a life that's long-lived but never has lived at all. Mm-hmm. So where are you getting your information, and how much information do you need? Are you paralyzed? In order to live a life, you have to be able to take some kind of risk.
Yes. And let's think about that one who may be paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And consider that it may be literal.
Mm-hmm.
What perhaps would be their risk
mm-hmm.
would be maybe in the realm of following a child in that their emotions are what they're risking to be able to still make decisions.
Right.
Perhaps everything is done for them, but there mm-hmm. are things
mm-hmm.
within their capacity, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways a person can function.
Mm-hmm. I would say that most people function by engaging in things without thinking. They function almost unconsciously. You know, we could call it routines or patterns or things like that, where people just trust, and you could maybe call that a childlike thing. I'm not going to think it through. I'm just going to trust what's going on around me. And I believe that most people do it unconsciously, because when I actually bring up risks to people, like when people come in and they're paralyzed, usually they're not thinking with trust. They're thinking, you know, quite literally. Like, when you imagine what we actually do in our day-to-day lives, we're consistently, almost daily, taking significant risks with our lives. Like, when I think about driving on a highway, which is a worldwide phenomenon, and you're driving a distance from another vehicle that's driving in the opposite direction at a similar speed, you know, they're both going, like, say, 100 kilometers an hour, and you measure the distance maybe in inches of these two cars passing each other. Basically, a collision that would be equivalent to hitting a brick wall at 200 kilometers an hour. And we do it without really thinking about those consequences or how easily. I mean, you can see it sometimes when you watch like a Tesla now, obviously extremely rare, but some of the Tesla quirks that were happening early on, and I'm not an expert, but I remember hearing about this, where they would all of a sudden jerk in one direction or another in the autopilot, the self-driving. And then, yeah, that could happen. And it's like, wow, you're just one steering wheel jerk away from potentially ending your life. And you're not in control. It's not even your steering wheel you're worried about. It's the other person's, right? And most people, most of the time, don't think about it. We just live.
Yes.
And if people are frozen and they actually think about it, very quickly you get to this conundrum of, how do you feel about dying? How do you feel about your own death?
Mm-hmm.
And if people are paralyzed by the thought of their own death, they have two choices. One, they live unconsciously. Or two, they have to come to terms with the fact that they may die. Mm-hmm. In order to live, they have to risk their life.
Mm-hmm. Always being able to hold your life with an open hand in the way of believing that you'll always live.
Mm-hmm.
That you have a breath here and then you'll have a breath on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to have the simplicity of that without the feeling of being a stunt devil, you know, death-defying mentality at every turn because adrenaline is your drug, and or different reasons why, you know, you would pursue the highest risk, which could be, you know, that could be what's built in a person and that kind of a thing. But I think what I'm saying is the availability that you have for the swiftness of change, if you're holding too tightly, is the opposite.
Yeah, definitely. Like, this might be a surprise, you know, if you're listening and you're like, what, Cyrus? You're talking about death? I don't think about that. And it's like, most people don't. Myself, personally, I do. Like, I've had to come to terms with that stunt devil kind of thinking, because I certainly live unconsciously a lot of the time, for sure. I think I do a little less than others just because my nervous system's a little more sensitive. And so I do think about those things more frequently. I mean, for me, when you think about life on the other side, those are questions many people don't struggle with as frequently because they just don't think about it and they don't think about the risks. But for me, I do. And so that kind of thinking has been more important to me because I think about how I could die, you know, in these things that other people just do without thinking, or many do without thinking. And I think, even though I've had to do it because my nervous system is more sensitive, I also see the benefit of it for people with all kinds of nervous systems, for people to be able to have thought it through and to come to terms with the end of their life can lead to so much peace when dealing with things that maybe are a bigger risk that they perceive.
Thinking about the risk taker or the anti-risk taker that different personalities have trained their nervous system to be more responsive. And some of them are not trained, and maybe they could use a little bit more responsiveness in their alert psyche, like their body's ability to recognize danger and use some common sense in there. That's something that can be played out physically. For example, you use driving, but it can be played out for the way we handle conflict.
Yeah, I mean, there's pluses and minuses to having a sensitive nervous system to not having a sensitive nervous system. If you have a sensitive nervous system, you're usually more emotionally in tune, you're more empathic typically. If you are less sensitive, you're typically able to be more protective and maybe be more of an enforcer in dangerous situations or things like that, engaging in dangerous behaviors. So they both have their benefits, but we often want to calibrate it. And the best would be able to be flexible, to kind of be the sensitive cowboy, to be able to engage in the protective behavior, but also then be sensitive when needed. And I do think this is something that we want to be able to calibrate. We want to be able to flex between them. And I do think that many people who don't have that sensitivity, again, it's not always a negative, are looking, because they have certain experiences, to become more sensitive and learn how to manage that. Another really common one is people will be less sensitive younger, and then they'll become more sensitive as they get older, either because of a trauma or because their stress response can't take it anymore, they're taking so many risks, and all of a sudden they start to have panic attacks or things like this that surprise them. So they become more sensitive over time, and then they have to learn to think about life in a new way. They have to learn to deal with all of these impacting experiences that never used to bother them, but now feel like bigger risks.
Right. And when you learn different parts of your body's response emotionally, physically, when you learn those things based on whatever's gone on, either in your past or a recent part of your life that's built this decision-making part of you, and then some of it feels like it's not available. So for somebody who doesn't have that decision, we used the idea of somebody being paralyzed. That would perhaps even be similar to PTSD, where somebody is in a frozen kind of a state. They're not able to move. And I feel like it's a little bit both. So take this sensitive cowboy scenario where you want them to perhaps grow in sensitivity, but they've got this rigid kind of a way about them. And then when they're met with this need, this beating heart around them that is requiring a shift, being able to be flexible, like you said, learning that there's a balance.
You know, there's kind of steps to that. One would be to kind of see the need, usually from another person, somebody else saying, hey, you need to be more sensitive. You need to be more aware. And so then they become aware that there's something that they're missing. It can often be hard for them to even believe that it's there because they don't sense it. But then to see the need and to take the risk to actually be like, oh, maybe there is something beyond my perception where I'm not being empathic, where I'm not being understood, where I'm not understanding, you know, like all of that. And then to begin to actually trust and to be able to be led into something that is harder for them to perceive, and that that can be real, that that can be very real for people.
Yes. You know? Mm-hmm. That's moving forward into possibility without knowing all of the outcome.
Yeah.
So you're going to move forward as best as you can.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we talk about this not knowing and then moving forward, everything that we do is moving into an unknown. Everything is stepping into something where maybe we know more, maybe we know less, but it's always a level of unknown. Unfortunately, people really like to feel like they know. And so what typically people will do is they will come up with a judgment based on what they know. They'll feel like they know it. And then they'll move forward, and oftentimes they will not revisit that first judgment. They'll just believe that that's true, and they'll continue to live in that first judgment even when they're running into problems. I mean, it's hard to think of everything all the time. We have to choose what we're going to think about. So part of that's necessary. But sometimes people need to be able to more frequently go back and revisit those previous decisions and judgments and thoughts about what's real and what's not and how things work. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about moving forward, it's like, okay, the ideal process would be like you have to make a judgment, you have to take the risk. And then the next challenge is to revisit that decision, that judgment about how the world works and what's the best decision, and modify it. Mm-hmm. And that can be really hard because basically that's consistently, constantly saying, I don't know, I'm wrong.
Yes.
And the stronger somebody in the beginning says, I'm right, the harder it is for them to look yes. back and modify.
Yeah. You're talking about marriage. Yes.
Yes.
That's right. That sounds like a relationship that works. By the way, the one that works is when you are also in that same way with the other person, is that you're willing to watch the shift and let them learn and be flexible with their having figured it out or not. When somebody is very staunch on a side and you observe it, that they can be staunch on that side and like, we'll figure it out or we won't. But letting them be in their process, the same as you would want that same feeling back to you, is like, I want you to be loving to me while I'm in my process.
Right.
And then I can be loving to you while you're in yours. And then that's just a series of letting go and observing.
Definitely. And this ideal place that's worked for me is to have compassion on myself as I move forward, constantly being wrong. Compassion is so necessary. I don't need as much compassion for myself if I believe I'm right all the time. But if I'm right all the time, then I stop learning. So I constantly believe that I'm wrong and improving, and I'm having compassion on myself for that, as that's the only way forward, is to not know. And to hopefully gradually know more, but never know to the point where I won't have some level of error or mistake in what I'm saying. And the compassion is so required, otherwise you can become paralyzed or you can beat yourself up with guilt. But the opposite is more dangerous to me, is to believe that I know and then to fumble and not be able to self-correct. So yeah, I encourage this, like, you don't know. And then people are like, how do you move? Usually it's this tremendous amount of compassion for yourself, of like, nobody knows. And that's just the way it is.
Oh, I would love to be able to give that as a gift to my husband and to other people in my life as well. I think even perhaps with the relationship where I'm looking outwards and not just at myself, yes, to say I'm wrong, but not necessarily to be like, you're wrong, and just jumping forward to compassion already in the relationship towards them. They may be right or they may be wrong. You might even think they're the best thing. They are always right. And wow, and having way too much admiration. Perhaps. And that's okay. Go ahead. Have that. Or too little. One way or the other, they're always wrong or they're always right. And I would suggest just skipping those two and go right to compassion, because one way or the other, it might change.
Right.
we're like the wind.
Yes.
I talked about the weather. Like,
we are like the wind, and we need to kind of be, you know, mindful of that, of how much we resemble a blade of grass being blown around. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges, actually, from that perspective, because I live in that feeling of, like, I'm always wrong, and compassion on myself, the challenge has been to be a teacher. How do you teach if you're wrong? And oftentimes teaching works better when done with some degree of confidence. And that's an interesting thing. How do you move in the ways that you need to move in your life? And I think there's room for that. I think that there's room to have an awareness of being wrong, but also still having confidence that you can be a step forward and can still lend help to the person who's one step behind. Not that they're in a worse place, but that we're all growing and we've all made certain progress in certain areas. We can help the people. If you're in grade 6, you can help people in grade 4. You know, like, you can always be a teacher, and just acknowledging where you're at and acknowledging who your audience is can help you to be confident in the level of not knowing.
That beautiful confidence of just having an assurance that you can help and speak with some kind of an assurance upon yourself for being able to share that. And then the one that's listening often learns, because especially if some of that confidence is shared in humility for what you don't know. And being able to express that, because now me as a student would learn better because I saw that you didn't know. And it made me feel less pressure to be perfect and appreciate your confidence because you were confident in not knowing. Thank you.
Definitely.
I really am glad for that.
I mean, if you want to be a teacher, you're way more trusted as a teacher if you frame things within the context of reality. So you're like, this is what I'm teaching, and this is who it's for. I'm teaching a beginner's class in guitar because I'm intermediate. You know what I mean? And if you can frame it in the context of what you don't know, the people will actually have more confidence. Rather than just going and saying, I know it all. I'm the best teacher out there. People will be like, oh, okay. But if you go and you're like, actually, I'm at this level, and these are things I can do, these are things I can't, and this is what I can teach you.
Yeah.
I actually find that teachers who have struggled and don't know everything are better teachers than people who are potentially savantish geniuses who are at a level that's unreachable.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
As well, because, like, I can't measure up. That's going to make me feel less than just being in the presence, and then it's going to possibly trigger different kinds of feelings of inadequacy. Really, I'd rather work with somebody who's accepting, accepting of themselves. I'll feel accepting if they're able to, with confidence, share their ups and downs.
Yeah, and so it actually opens up people that you're speaking to. So yeah, I think this idea of, like, taking this risk, I mean, it's all over the place, right? It's in the facing things, you know, any kind of decision that we're making, it's in passing information on. And I believe that it's so important, you know, to frame things. Even if you've got lofty goals, which are amazing because they can give you a path, you need to frame things just in small steps towards the unknown and consistently looking back and correcting. And if you don't do that, you can go a long way down the wrong path.
Well, thank you, Cyrus.
Well, thank you, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose.
But I can't take no more. Shawty in a brand new Jeep. Down for the gang, girl. Down for the streets. What you gonna do? Then you gotta change.